This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Allison Bektesh. Coming up next on APR, a live debate between 9th Judicial District Attorney candidates Sherry Kaloya, Chip McCrory, and Jeff Cheney. The 9th Judicial District serves Rio Blanco, Garfield, and Pitkin counties. This event is taking place at the Pitkin County Library and is open to the public.
Hello.
Join the conversation by tweeting your questions to @ Aspen Pub Radio or emailing barbara@aspenpublicradio.org. The district's attorney's race, a live debate moderated by Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen, is coming up next. Thanks for listening.
From the Dunaway Community Room in the Pitkin County Library. For the next hour or so, we will be asking questions of the three candidates who are running for the district attorney's seat, which serves Rio Blanco, Garfield, and Pitkin counties. The candidates are incumbent Sherry Kaloya, who has held the seat since 2012, and her challengers Chip McCrory and Jeff Cheney. Please join me in welcoming the candidates. To start it off, each candidate will give a two-minute opening statement. After that, I will ask them a series of questions, then let them ask a question of each other, and then open it up for studio audience and those who are listening live. Rules of engagement are up to two-minute answers and a one-minute response if necessary. The more succinct you are, the more the voters will get to know you, since I do have a lot of questions. And we also invite our listening audience to join the discussion by sending us a question via Twitter at Aspen Pub Radio, or send us an email at barbara@aspenpublicradio.org. So we will start with our opening statements. Ladies first, because Sherry's on my left. So please begin.
Good evening, everyone in the audience and out there. I'm Sherry Kaloya, your current district attorney. I was elected back in 2012 and took office in 2013. When I took office, I made some pretty immediate changes. I felt that the Aspen office was not being well run, and I changed attorneys immediately. One of my philosophies is to make sure that the attorneys assigned to each of my three counties matches the county that they're assigned to. Andrea Bryant came up here. She did an excellent job. The police and the sheriff loved her. She did a great job in court, and she was very well received. I had a few county court deputies go through, but I think they were also very well received. I now have another deputy who happens to live in Aspen, Sarah Ochtakevich, and she is taking over the reins from Andrea. I think Aspen's going to be really happy with her. My philosophy when I took office was to make sure that we looked at what we were doing and that we weren't overcharging things. I started a diversion program for youthful offenders. These are young adult offenders, low-level offenders, and I give them a chance to get out of the criminal justice system by going through a program and ending up without a criminal conviction. I think that the office that I put together has done an excellent job. Rio Blanco is also very aptly staffed with somebody who they like and he likes them. And we've done a great job. My conviction rate is about 75% because we're not taking just any case to trial. We're looking at cases, and you know what? If we can't prove it, it gets dismissed. We're looking at cases and saying, hey, it doesn't really rise to the level of a criminal charge. We're not filing it, or we're dismissing it. Because I think it's very important to look at the whole system, the defendant, the victim, what's going on, and how to make the system work. Thank you.
Jeff Cheney.
Thank you for those of you who are here tonight in person and those listening on the radio, and thanks for Aspen Public Radio sponsoring this event. I'm Jeff Cheney, and I'm seeking the honor of representing this judicial district as your next district attorney. There are three reasons that I would make my case to you why I would be the best candidate for your choosing this November. First is integrity. Integrity is doing the right thing despite politics or pressure or petty differences. The second is leadership. 20 years ago, I graduated from officer candidate school where the core curriculum was leadership. And what I learned about leadership is there's no substitute for servant leadership. Servant leadership is never asking someone to do something you don't know how to do, you're not willing to do, or you're at least not willing to learn how to do. I have been a servant leader all my life. As an assistant district attorney for this district for 7 years, I hired, trained, and mentored a number of deputy district attorneys who turned out to be fabulous prosecutors. In fact, many of whom have gone on to better jobs and more responsibility, even taking the bench as a judge. The last is experience. Experience is one of the most crucial qualities that we've been missing in the last 4 years of our district attorney's office. Not experience as far as how long I've been an attorney, it's experience as a prosecutor. I have over 10 years of experience as a prosecutor. I've tried every level of case, murder, rape, domestic abuse, and drunk driving. Experience is getting in the courtroom and doing what you're asking others to do as a servant leader. You know as well as I, if you're ever a victim or you're an accused of a criminal offense, it's going to be one of the most substantial things that ever happens to you in your life. You can't afford to have a prosecutor, a chief prosecutor, who lacks experience in the courtroom. And that's why I'm asking for your support this November. Integrity, leadership, experience. Thank you.
Chip McCrory.
Good evening. I'm Chip McCrory. I'm the independent candidate running for district attorney. Back in 1980, I started my career in the criminal law. I spent 4 years as a deputy district attorney in the Jefferson County DA's office handling big city prosecutions in the west half of Denver. I moved up from being a county court deputy doing traffic and misdemeanors to being a felony team leader, meaning I not only did felony prosecutions, including first-degree murders, I was also responsible for the training and supervision of three other attorneys. In 1984, I got a job offer and came up to Pickens County starting January of 1985, and I served 12 years in the Pickens County District Attorney's Office up here, starting as a deputy district attorney, becoming chief deputy in charge of the Aspen office, and then becoming the assistant district attorney, which is second in command of the DA's office. I left in 1997 when my boss, Milt Blakey, lost the 96 election, and I've spent 19 years now as a criminal defense attorney in the Valley. I can say that I have more experience as a prosecutor combined than both of my opponents in this particular case, and I have the added benefit of 19 years of working the other side and understanding the entire criminal justice process from both the defense side, the prosecution side, with also experience about how it affects witnesses, police officers, and even just jurors being dragged into court for a court date. I am the independent candidate. We have a Republican and a Democrat here, but district attorney's office is an office where you do not have to be a partisan person to get the job done. You don't have to form coalitions to pass laws. And so the district attorney by itself can serve and the people without changing his policies, with having to compromise. If you elect me as an independent, you are not throwing away your vote. And I would ask for your vote this fall. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a question I have is, does it matter what party you belong to for this race? Is that people should be voting Democrat, Independent, or Republican?
Who are you asking me?
I'll start with you and go down the line quickly, because...
Well, the short answer is, as an independent, I have to self-fund, and I had to find 650 voters in this jurisdiction to sign a petition to get me on the ballot. I had more than that. I had about 860 signatures, because there's always fallback and fallout that the signatures are disqualified by the Secretary of State's office. I do not have the support of either the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. I know Jeff and Sherry have gotten some support from them. I am a complete grassroots operation, and the funding has come from supporters of mine and people who think I would do a good job. But in the actual operation of the office, there is no handicap whatsoever to being an independent. In fact, a number of our police chiefs are Democrats, A number of them are Republicans, and some of them probably have no affiliation whatsoever. And as a district attorney, you have to work with all of them and get the job done.
Thanks. Jeff, go right in your mic, please.
In 10 years of prosecuting, I never prosecuted any offender who committed a crime against a Democrat, Republican, or Independent. They didn't choose their victim based on their party affiliation. Party affiliation has very little or nothing to do about being the district attorney. In fact, it's inappropriate to use partisanship or party membership as a basis for decision making. You have to base your decisions on the evidence and the law and nothing else. And a prosecutor's job is to do justice, not to do justice with regard to what the Republicans think is justice, not to do justice with regard to what the Democrats think is justice, but to do justice. Thankful to say that I have the support of both Republicans, Democrats, and Independents throughout the district. And it doesn't matter to them, and it doesn't matter to me. Thank you.
Thanks. Sherry?
I am a Democrat. I've been a Democrat for a long time. However, I get no support from the Democratic Party, monetarily, that is, and very little other support. I agree with the other two. It doesn't matter whether you're a Republican, Democrat, or an Independent. This is probably a race that shouldn't be affiliated with a party. It happens to be, and so here we are. But I have the support of many Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. And I think the party affiliation really doesn't come into play in this race as it does in other races.
Thanks. Sherry, please tell us what your, I want to know from all of you, but Sherry, you start, what your level of discretion should be with the DA's office and when you should be charging people. You know, what are you doing to keep people out of jail, basically?
It's a difficult question. Prosecutor does have discretion as to whether to charge a crime or not. I do use my discretion probably on a daily basis. There are some crimes that I just don't feel need to be charged. For example, I get the police department bringing people in who've been arrested for what they call contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Factual situation is you got a 19-year-old guy who's in the park with his 17-year-old girlfriend and he hands her a beer. Well, to me, that's not a contributing, that's not a felony charge, and I don't charge those. There are other charges that are things that you need to look at. You know, there's some accidents that we've had where two young boys are fooling around, for lack of a better term, and somebody gets injured, somebody gets killed. They're both responsible in my book, and do we want to tag the boy who lived with a criminal offense? And those are some of the questions that we have to answer when we're using our prosecutorial discretion. I do use that. I do look for what's just, what's appropriate in the situation, what the communities are looking for, because our communities are different, and I apply that every day. Many times to the chagrin of police departments, who tend to be a lot more staunch and black and white in that.
Jeff Cheney?
Question, do you need it again?
Good. I think every day a district attorney should exercise his or her discretion responsibly with justice as the key objective. I disagree with my opponent with regard to the scenario painted. The legislature codifies, writes the law. They define what is and what is not criminal behavior, not the district attorney. There are two separate branches of government. One is the legislative, one is the executive. The district attorney is part of the executive branch of government. When the district attorney ignores the legislature, it breaches and violates one of the fundamental tenets of our country and our democracy, and that's the separation of powers. I don't write the law, it's my job to enforce it. That said, it is important to recognize what a victim's perspective is with regard to charging. If I were the father of that teenage girl to whom that 19-year-old or 20-year-old had given a six-pack of beer, I think I might take umbrage with the statement that I'm not going to charge that individual. I think you have to look at the facts, the circumstances, and the law, and try your best to do justice. and exercise your discretion based upon the facts and the circumstances and the responsibility of the DA as a representative for the executive branch of government, and also listen to victims.
Thank you. Chip McCrory?
The district attorney is unique in the legal system of most of this planet. District attorneys in the United States have almost unbridled discretion about what charges to bring, what cases to prosecute, and what cases to dismiss. About the only control, there's a couple technical laws there that do that, but about the only controls on what happens to a district attorney is that he stands before an election every several years, and the community can decide in a referendum whether or not they approve of how that is being handled. With that said, just as part of the everyday discretion of a district attorney, one has to decide whether or not which charge to bring. There are a number of charges that could be brought under Sherry's scenario. Contributing to the delinquency of a minor is a class 4 felony offense. However, giving alcohol to a minor is a misdemeanor. There are a number of different charges that may apply in that particular case, and as Jeff said, every factual scenario is different. But I would not agree to just willy-nilly filing felony charges because it looks good or because it amps up your felony charges and felony caseloads for the statistics. What you really want to do when you're filing a case is come up with an appropriate charge that you can prove and come up with an appropriate disposition so that hopefully that offender will not return to the court system.
Thank you. Chip, I'm going to ask all of this, but Chip, you go first on this. What do you believe is the appropriate amount of plea bargains to be made in a year?
There is no number. Periodically, you will hear candidates for district attorney say they're going to bar plea bargaining. If you ever hear a candidate say that, do not vote for that person because he's lying to you. There are about 600 felony cases filed per year in this judicial district between Pitkin, Garfield, and Rio Blanco County. There are 5 district court judges. If those judges did nothing except try criminal cases, they could do about 250 in a year. The others would have to be dismissed for speedy trial. That also means that they would not be doing divorces. They would not be doing civil lawsuits. They would not be doing water cases because they would be doing nothing except criminal cases. There are several thousand traffic and misdemeanor cases that get filed in this jurisdiction every year. Once again, we have a total of 4 county court judges for all 3 counties. If they did nothing except cases, they might get in 2 a week, in which case you're looking at a couple hundred cases that could be done. So the answer is there will be plea bargaining. The secret is do an appropriate plea bargain. Some cases have to be tried. Some cases will be tried because either the defendant or the defense attorney will not accept what is a reasonable plea offer, but the vast majority of them can be handled with an appropriate disposition.
Thank you. Jeff, you had, I read in one of the papers, criticized your opponent for having 60% in Garfield County mm-hmm. for plea bargains. What do you think is the appropriate amount?
Excuse me, Carol, what do you do with the... I believe that 60% was charges dismissed.
Charges dismissed.
There's a difference between that and right. cases dismissed.
Thank you very much. Charges dismissed.
Thank you, Chip. That's right.
Tell me what you believe to be the right amount of plea bargains. I mean, and what do you do with the workload if you don't do that?
Sure. A good question. I think what you have to understand is it's a matter of limited resources, and your resources are your courtrooms and your people. I have been a county court deputy handling county courts in 2 different counties in our judicial district. Been out of the office in Glenwood for 4 days out of the 5-day week and come back, and I have 30-some-odd voicemails on my phone. And the reason I was out of the office is I was trying cases and doing dockets. That's overwhelming, and you can't expect your people to continue that pace of workload. So what you have to understand is there's a limitation on the resources in the courtrooms, as Chip said. What I take umbrage with is that the default position, seemingly, of our administration, our DA's office now, is that the police are overcharging. The charges, just to make a point, need to be dismissed so that one can say, I'm going to hold the police to a task. What I say is use your common sense and use your experience as a trial attorney and dismiss the charges you can't prove. Don't dismiss the charges to prove a point. Only dismiss the charges you can't prove. And only dismiss the charges that your limited resources can't cover. I believe we have a default position now that we're just going to show the police who's boss. And I think what that's created is an animosity and a relationship between the two law enforcement entities in our district, which can't get along and aren't doing justice and making our community less safe. So there is no magical number. It's based upon the evidence and it's based on the resources.
Thank you. Sherry, would you like to respond and then also answer the question of what you believe? And tell us what your percentage has been for plea bargains since you've been in office.
Plea bargaining is the same under my administration as it's been under the previous one and the previous one. Plea bargains are typically engaged, plea bargaining is typically engaged in as the case comes forward. You learn about the other side's case for the first time and you say, oh, I don't have a case maybe, or this charge isn't right, or something's going on here. So you do adjust your position because you're listening to what the other side is telling you and you're getting the other half of the story. If you're talking about plea bargaining because I want to prove a point, I would ask for hardcore facts, hardcore evidence of that, because that is simply not the case. Plea bargaining goes on just as it has in the past, and the conviction rate is pretty much the same when you're looking at plea bargains. In fact, our no-file rate is exactly the same now as it was under the previous administration. I'm looking at what we can prove. I am not looking to prove a point. And I think that's very evident if you look at the case, the facts, the law, and you make a judgment, a decision about what really can we prove here. And we're charging the charge we can prove, not the highest charge that is possibly applicable to this situation. I think that's a very important matter that makes our system go a lot smoother. It makes us as prosecutors a whole lot more honest and forthright. And I think it makes the defense attorneys come forward and say, look, this is what really went on, so that we can get to the truth of the matter.
Thank you. You are listening to Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. You are listening to a live debate from the Dunaway Community Room in Pickens County Library. We are having a debate with the candidates running for the DA's seat for the 9th Judicial District, incumbent Sherry Collette, and challengers Jeff Cheney and Chip McCrory.
Carolyn, could I have a brief response? The question sort of morphed to that 60% after I had answered.
Sure. I'll give you a minute for that quickly.
Thank you.
Can do it less.
Lou Valario, the sheriff of Garfield County, alleged that some 70% of the charges were being dismissed and that somehow this was a deficiency of the district attorney's office. That has actually been parroted some in this particular campaign. And the point I wish to make is simply this, is you cannot talk about plea bargaining by the number of charges dismissed. In your average drunk driving case, a person might get charged with DUI, having excessive blood alcohol, and weaving. They plead guilty to DUI, the most serious charge, and as part of the plea bargain, the other two charges get dismissed, and you've just dismissed 66% of the charges. Those allegations about charges are nothing more than political rhetoric. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm going to switch to law enforcement. I've got a few categories, and one of them is law enforcement. And this is for Jeff and Chip. Sherry Collette has been criticized. This is kind of a long question, so bear with me, and then it's a two-parter. Sherry Collette has been criticized by other law enforcement agencies for, one, making it too difficult to get warrants approved, and two, for rejecting or pleading cases that she believes she cannot get prosecuted with a likelihood of success, which is the standard used by all DAs throughout the state in determining what cases should go to trial. So, in light of these criticisms and concerns, what is your view on how the underlying investigation affects these decisions, and what do you believe should be the proper division of investigative responsibility between law enforcement agencies and the investigators of the DA's office? Jeff, I'll let you go first.
I think what I've heard most talked about by our current DA is this notion of I hold the police to a task and I don't mind holding them to a task to a higher standard. I've yet to hear any distinction about what probable cause is with respect to getting a warrant to search an individual or a place, or a warrant to arrest an individual and incarcerate them. I think there is a distinction with the difference. I think one is an investigative tool, and probable cause is the constitutional standard recognized throughout the land. Probable cause is the same here as it is in Arlington, Texas, or Bangor, Maine. This thing seems to reverberate, that's why.
It does, but you get closer.
Okay, thank you. Probable cause is the constitutional standard, and so when our district attorney's office rejects a search warrant because they don't feel they can prove a crime, that's not the point. That's the incorrect standard. Probable cause standard is whether a crime was committed and whether there may be evidence of the crime in the place to be searched and the thing to be seized. There's yet to be a distinction between that by our current district attorney. So I think there is a distinction with the difference, and I think when I make the point that she's making decisions to prove a point, it's absolutely with regard to those two different standards that she's not applying to that scenario. The investigation of a crime is essential to successful prosecution of a crime. And the district attorney's job is to be a leader in law enforcement, and that is not to let petty personality conflicts, politics, or partisanship interfere with the district attorney's job to being a leader and putting those things aside and allowing yourself to rise above the fray of personality conflicts and petty disagreements. It's the district attorney's job to have a relationship with law enforcement so that they can work together during the investigation, because an unconstitutional investigation is an unsuccessful prosecution.
Chip, would you like to answer the question, and then Sherry, you can obviously respond and answer the question as well.
Well, I agree the standard for getting warrants or arresting someone is probable cause. However, you put a room full of lawyers together and ask them what constitutes probable cause, and you will probably get about 60 different answers. That conflict sometimes comes up with the police, and frankly, I've approved warrants where I thought were probable cause and had the judge decide there wasn't probable cause. So that is an ongoing debate and dispute that will continue on no matter who gets elected district attorney. With regards to investigations, it has also been my experience through 30 some odd years in the criminal justice system that police agencies really love to bring a case up to probable cause enough to get an arrest, and then they tend to dump it on the doorstep of the district attorney, and any follow-up they hope will be done by the DA investigators. And you sometimes get a great deal of conflict because you kick that back to the investigating agency and say, okay, maybe we've got probable cause, but I'd really wish you had interviewed the other three witnesses to the incident to see what they had to say. And some police agencies accept that, some police agencies get upset about it, and it's also done on an individual basis. Some officers are very good at working with the DAs and following up, and some pretty much feel that once they presented the case, their part of that is done, and everything else has to be done by the investigators. DA investigators have an important role. Among other things, as you're preparing for trial, there may be all sorts of follow-up investigations that they need to do. And of course, there may be cases brought to the district attorney that were not brought to the local law enforcement, where someone perhaps doesn't trust the sheriff's department or a police department and therefore wants the district attorney to actually investigate. And so there's need to have DA investigators, but they can't be consistently, constantly following up on other matters that should have been handled by the original agency.
Thank you, Chip. Sherry, would you like to respond to the question, which is that you've been criticized by other law enforcement agencies for making it too difficult to get warrants approved and rejecting or pleading cases that you don't think you can get prosecuted successfully?
Nobody likes to be told no. And sometimes we tell the police it's not enough, and they don't like that. It's not a frequent occurrence, because I'd say we approve 95 or more percent of the search warrants and the arrest warrants that come across our desk. There are some cases that we don't feel there's enough. Search warrants, I agree. you get probable cause for a search warrant, probable cause to believe a crime's been committed. Search warrants are approved a little bit easier than arrest warrants are approved. But I hold the police to a high standard because you got somebody's life on the line. You got somebody going to jail. Of course I hold them to a high standard. Jeff Cheney would like to believe that there's petty differences and somebody's not doing their job because of petty differences. Well, let me tell you that the sheriff's office in Garfield County is doing their job, and so are we. They're in and out of my office every day. They call, they consult with people, and we put politics aside. You've not heard any examples where that's not been the case. Even Sheriff Joe. Sheriff Joe and I disagree about releasing video before the trial. He speaks his mind. I speak mine. That's it. We shake hands. We get along fine. If you don't disagree, I'm telling you, you're going to get a bad product. You don't want people in the system who all agree with each other because that is not going to get the best result.
Thank you. Sherry?
Since I was mentioned, could I have a 30-second
sure.
rebuttal?
Sure. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think you need to listen to the rhetoric from our current DA and understand there's two teams involved in the criminal justice system. There's team offender and there's team victim. There's team people. All I'm hearing out of our current district attorney is only an empathy for the team offender. There's no mention of the victim. There's a victim also possibly that's been offended and suffered the consequences of having a crime committed. I'm just as concerned about the victim of a crime as our current district attorney is about the offender.
Thanks. Sherry, how do you think our law enforcement agencies are doing in the three counties that the district serves?
Some have more resources than others, and some do better. Others.
Which ones?
Oh, I'm not going to say, but I will say that Sheriff Joe has an excellent team. they all have their strengths, and we work with all of them. I have a team of three very good investigators who are willing to dive in and help any agency that doesn't have the manpower or doesn't have the skills to do any kind of a case. That's why they're there. I hired a certified fraud examiner who is able to jump in for embezzlements and thefts. I've got someone who can look at electronics and data and hop in and help with that kind of thing. And I've got another investigator who's very good with interviewing, sexual assaults, homicide investigations, and we do all work together.
Chip, what do you think about our law enforcement agencies in the district? And are they doing a good job, and where can they improve?
Well, when I was a prosecutor, they did a great job. As a defense attorney, oh, it was terrible. the short answer is there is a disparity throughout the whole district. Partly that's due to training. Partly that's due to the resources. Some of the smaller counties can't do quite as much training. They have less experienced officers. I will say that as a general rule, all the officers are very dedicated to their job. They want to do a good job. They are very pro-law enforcement. And sometimes because of that, I think that they don't really understand how the whole system works. And they sometimes feel that when they bring a good case to court and they don't get the result they want, that that is not a strength of the system we have, but rather that something has gone wrong. And we have to remember, of course, in our system of laws, people are presumed innocent, and proof has to be by proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And that is to a jury of our peers. And sometimes that's a very, very tough standard. And police officers who are very strongly involved in a case sometimes don't see it the same way the jury does.
Thank you. Jeff, Cheney?
I've been very fortunate to be a trainer of law enforcement all across the state. As a matter of fact, I was asked, not even though I wasn't a prosecutor, to come and teach at the Colorado Division of Wildlife Outdoor Investigator Academy a few months ago over on the Front Range. Training law enforcement is the job of the district attorney's office. While there may be a difference in training, I can tell you there's no difference in dedication and heart. I've looked in the eyes of many an officer who has been up all night and refused to go to bed until the case is ready. And I don't agree that officers are looking at the first opportunity to drop the case off and pass the buck on to the district attorney's office. That may be the case now, but that wasn't the case when we were involved in the district attorney's office, because we trained those departments. We took initiative and proactively sought to work with them so that they had the comfort to stay up all night and deprive themselves of sleep so that the case was investigated properly. I'm very, very fortunate to live in the 9th Judicial District. We're very fortunate to have the brave men and women in law enforcement that we have. And while the training may be different, the hiring standards may be different, there is no difference in their dedication. I can tell you that.
So you think they're doing a good job?
I do.
Okay, good. Let's go to staffing for a second. Jeff and Chip, you know, if you take office, obviously there's going to be changes. So, you know, if you're elected, what do you plan to do with the current staff? Will people lose their jobs, and how do you decide that? Chip?
It's a weird statute, but the DA statute says that all DA employees serve at the pleasure of the district attorney, which means that you can come in and, if you want, fire your whole staff. I'm not that foolish. The bottom line of it is the non-lawyer staff is very hardworking, they're very long-term, they're very professional, and there's no reason why you would have any changeovers made. Currently, it's a little unclear as to who will be the staff with the attorneys. There are three felony attorneys who've left in the last month and a half, and from what Sherry said at a previous debate, she's hired two new attorneys on that. I don't know who they are. They haven't taken office yet. So obviously, any new DA coming in there is going to have to sit down and talk with his staff and talk with his attorneys and see if, for example, they want to continue. I left the DA's office in 1997 because I didn't want to work for Milt Blakey's successor. I had worked with him and just didn't feel like I wanted to be working in that same office. There may be deputy DAs who would feel that same way about me or Jeff Cheney if that was the case. But certainly I'm not looking at any wholesale changeover of the attorneys. Most of them are very dedicated professionals. There are several here in the audience here today. And as I say, I don't anticipate much in the way of turnover at all.
Jeff, how would you respond to that? Who are you going to fire?
I learned a long time ago as an infantry rifle platoon leader, you never go in and take over your platoon and start making big decisions without evidence, without observation. There's no excuse to go in and fire anyone without cause, regardless of what the statute says. I think our district attorneys, our paralegals, our victim advocates are all dedicated folks. Many of them are people that I worked with long ago. That dedication hasn't changed despite their leadership. What I do think is that we need a change in leadership to inspire the staff that we do have, to inspire the staff as it only a trial attorney can do, as a person who's had their hands dirty in the courtroom and tried cases with the best of them, the highest level of cases. And that inspires folks to be more dedicated and to stick around and work harder. I think at the last debate, we found out that Ms. Colloy has lost over a dozen prosecutors. Now, I recall almost 10 years ago, one of the chief criticisms Ms. Colloy had of the district attorney at the time, who she sought to recall, was her turnover. There's just been just as much a turnover under Ms. Colloy's leadership as the DA that she criticized. This office needs a leader who knows how to be a servant leader and doesn't ask people to do something they don't know how to do and aren't willing to do themselves.
I'd like to respond to that.
Obviously you can, and then you can also answer the question too.
The DA who was recalled worked for a year, and she had that much turnover. I've been in office for 4 years. The climate is now good, and some of my attorneys have moved on to better jobs. Some of the attorneys have decided they didn't like prosecution, or they needed to move back home to Idaho or Oklahoma. There's a lot of reasons why young attorneys move on. You can expect about 2 to 4 years from them. I've just hired three new attorneys to work in the office. One has 6 years of prosecution experience in Colorado Springs working on the Special Victims Unit. One has 3 years of experience working in Texas. He'll be in Aspen. And the other has 6 years of experience as a civil litigator. He's going to be in Glenwood Springs. Once Andrea quit to go on to the Aspen attorney's office, I was fortunate to find these three people, and my staff is very inspired. We talk about cases, we act as a team, and I can tell you that they all like that, and they're very inspired.
Sherry, if we went to all those people that have quit, would they say it was because of you? Was it because of your management style, or is it because they got a better offer, or there was a better opportunity?
I can tell you, one will tell you it was because of me, and good riddance. The others, hey, Andrea's making $20,000 more. Ann Norden is going to be a district court judge. I don't think anyone else would say that it was because of me. I think that it was all circumstances that led them to pursue other opportunities. And I don't think my turnover is any different than the last administration's.
Okay, thank you. This is Aspen Public Radio. You are listening to a live debate from the Dunaway Community Room in the Pickens County Library. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. We are listening to candidates running for the DA's seat for the 9th Judicial District, incumbent Sherry Kaloya, and challengers Jeff Chaney and Chip McCrory. Grassroots TV is also here and will be airing the debate on Channel 12. And check out grassrootstv.org for the details. Let me just follow up on that really quick, and then I'm going to let you guys ask a question of each other and then get to some social media and audience questions. Yeah, in light of the departure of certain attorneys from the office, into, like as you said, Sherry, into higher paid government positions, it's clear that the average chief supervisor salary of a DA is significantly lower than a starting salary for other government attorneys. So what would you do to ensure that deputy DAs in your office are receiving competitive salaries compared with these other higher paid government jobs?
It's difficult because I have to go to three counties for my budget. Rio Blanco County and Garfield County have revenues that are severely down. They've said zero increase in your budget. We will not approve anything that's not a zero increase. Pitkin County's in a better situation, but Pitkin County's only 20% of the equation. I have to listen to the counties and their and what they have for resources, and I have to work within that. And so it is difficult. And other government agencies do pay their lawyers more. So I have to struggle.
How do you attract a good hire then?
Well, in some instances, for example, the guy that likes Rio Blanco County and goes up there, I give him a four-day work week because he's got a young child that he wants to do daycare for, and I've accommodated him in that manner. Last year, I went out and asked for a 10% raise for my deputies because they deserved it, and I was worried about that. And I got it and was able to do that. This year, I'm not. We work as a team. I think people like working in my office.
Chip, how do you address the difficulty in attracting and retaining good attorneys where they can go to higher paid jobs, which is the case for at least two women who have left the office recently?
That's true, although there are a number of others who have left to lower paying jobs. There was one who worked here in Aspen who left. We don't know exactly why he left, but he then went to the Huerfano County DA's office where he took a major cut in pay, an increase in work, and the working conditions were nowhere nearly as much fun as working out of the Aspen DA's office. When I was in the district attorney's office, we were dealing with some of the problems of the oil shale bust. And there were three straight years where the county commissioners told the DA's office to make a 10% cut. Next year, Milt Blakey went back, was given another 10% cut. After that, there was another 10% cut. And Milt had to juggle all that. One of the things that happened was we didn't get much in the pay raises for that three-year period of time, but we liked working in the DA's office. We liked working for Milt Blakey. I believe being a deputy district attorney is one of the all-time fun legal jobs. You get to be in court. And when you look at where you're living here, you have access to ski areas, unparalleled hunting, fishing, mountaineering of all sorts. I believe it's much easier actually to recruit deputy district attorneys for this area than it is for some of the other areas. You may not get as much advancement as you might get in the big city DA's offices, but for those who are looking for a better lifestyle, I think there are a number of candidates.
Jeff Cheney, how would you attract and retain good attorneys in your office?
Your people are your most important asset. And in order to attract good attorneys, you have to be a good attorney. You have to be a prosecutor. You have to embrace prosecution and have a passion about the job because, as I said, it's infectious. It's contagious. And that's how you attract good attorneys. I can tell you what you don't do to keep them. You don't spend over $1 million to remodel your office. If your budget is your biggest concern, then your office should be your last priority. Your people should be your number one priority. Their salaries, taking care of themselves and their families ought to be at the height of your priority list, not remodeling your office. And that's what's happened in this previous administration. Nearly $1 million was spent to remodel the district attorney's office. And the number one issue cited by our current DA right now is her budget. Ask yourself, why would you spend that much money from taxpayers to remodel your office?
Sherry,
you have to take care of your people. They're your most important asset.
Sherry, did you remodel your office for $1 million?
Yes, I did. And unfortunately, my two opponents who've never had a job that really focuses on government law and what government budgeting is, they don't seem to understand government budgeting. The office was remodeled in Garfield County using capital funds that the county has for building and building structures. And that's what it uses those funds for. The DA's office was a mishmash of put together offices. There weren't enough private spaces. There was huge open hallways and rooms, forcing everyone to work in the same room, and it just didn't work. The county commissioners offered to have it remodeled. I took them up on it. They use capital funds, and it has nothing to do with the regular budget, which restricts staffing and other day-to-day expenses.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to move on. We're running out of time, so I want to go quickly on questions to ask each other. And I'm going to start with Jeff. You get to pick an opponent to ask a question and try to respond within a minute to whoever that person is.
Sherry.
Into the mic, please.
I get to pick who asked me a question?
No, you ask a question of somebody else.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Misunderstood. My question is to our current DA. If you have a decision to make with regard to probable cause, do you find a distinction between probable cause for a search warrant or an arrest warrant?
Probable cause is probable cause. The probable cause for a search warrant is whether evidence may be found of a crime in the location that you want to look for it in. We approve almost all the search warrants. There's very, very few that we don't. And we don't approve them. It's because we can't say that evidence could be found in this location. That's what we use. That's what we've always used. And there are a few that aren't approved, but those are few and far between.
Chip, would you like to ask a question?
Yes, my question will be to Jeff Cheney. Jeff, you have at previous debates indicated that if elected DA, you will have a citizen advisory board to give you advice about plea bargaining, and you would have a victim's assistance volunteers to help with victim witness matters. My question to you is, with that particular stance, when you have professional victim witness people, and you have various privacy and confidentiality laws, how you plan to work with those particular civilians? And secondly, if you know what you're doing as district attorney, why do you need a civilian advisory board to tell you how to handle plea bargains?
That's a good question. The reason I think you need a citizen advisory board is because the citizens are who you work for. I believe in government of, by, and for the people, not of myself, what I think is best. I'm a public servant, and therefore I'm accountable to the public. I think one of the ways that we can be more accountable to the public are not to wait for the four-year election cycle, but to pick citizens from our judicial district who are interested in providing input and feedback and oversight to the district attorney to ensure that the district attorney's office is serving the public from which these citizens are derived. I don't see there's any admission that I don't know what I'm doing when I'm seeking input from the people that I represent. That's just contrary to democracy. I represent the people, and I need to know who they are, and I need to consult them. I would handle the privacy laws by providing specialized training. I've been on boards where private information and confidential information is disseminated, and each of the board members have to sign a non-disclosure agreement and receive training with regard to the sensitivity of the information. I would make sure that's done.
Thank you, Jeff. Sherry, would you like to ask a question to one of your opponents?
I'll ask a question to Mr. McCrory. Running the DA's office means supervising a staff of about 30 to 32 people. Tell me who you have supervised as an employee in the past 10 years and what your philosophy is.
Well, obviously, being a defense attorney in solo practice, I have not had a staff that I've supervised in the last 10 years. But if you go back to when I worked for the district attorney's office, I was the chief deputy in charge of the Aspen office. That meant I was in charge of one other attorney, two secretaries, and one investigator. When I was a team leader down at the Jefferson County District Attorney's Office, I had supervision and training of three other attorneys. And it's true, I have been a solo practice defense attorney for the last 19 years, and I can tell you that my one employee, myself, is a very difficult person to handle, but we managed to get through it.
Yes, he is.
So I've been told. Thank you. There is a question that came in via social media, and it is this. With domestic violence homicide arrests in the Valley in less than 2 years, with two domestic violence homicide arrests in the Valley in 2 years, I'd like to ask each candidate how they will handle domestic violence cases if they are elected. Sherry, please respond to that if you can.
Domestic violence are some of the hardest cases that we have to prosecute. They are handled very seriously. And right from the get-go, right from the time that the defendant is advised, we're on the phone with the victim, getting her input, getting her into court. Our victim witness staff works with the victims very closely, and they're consulted every single step of the way. They also work with the victim advocacy groups out there, Response and the Advocate Safe House, in order to develop plans and goals and to figure out how they're going to go forward. We also have doubled our victim witness victim compensation amounts. A lot of this is to victims of domestic violence, and most of it goes for counseling for them. It pays for counseling. And so it is treated seriously, and we do work very closely with victims.
Well, we just saw this case happen last week or almost 2 weeks ago. I mean, he already had a pending domestic violence charge.
He did not have a pending domestic violence charge. There was an arrest warrant that was issued for his arrest for a domestic violence incident that had happened in August. He was not arrested, unfortunately. And then this happened.
Okay. Jeff, would you like to answer this question about domestic violence and how you approach it, given that there's been two homicides?
The first thing a prosecutor thinks about when he handles or she handles a domestic violence case is, this that case? Is this the case of the offender for whom this victim has suffered prolonged violence unreported? Every prosecutor has to keep that at the forefront of their mind. What I would do, and what I've promised to do on my website, cheneyforda.com, is form a domestic violence task force within the first 6 months of my office, of my assuming office, if I'm honored to do that. I would work with Response, our local provider, and the Advocate Safe House in Glenwood Springs, and ensure that our staff is cognizant of the importance of recognizing domestic violence cases and their severity. We have cases here in this judicial district where it's my understanding strangulation was involved. And this case, because of a well-known person in the community, was pled down to harassment, a misdemeanor. That's disturbing. That's not taking domestic violence seriously. I've also read a quote from a victim, or actually not from a victim, from our district attorney in the newspaper that said, the only evidence we had was the word of the victim. Well, sometimes that's all you have, and it's your job to work with law enforcement to get more.
Chip, would you like to answer that question?
Certainly. Domestic violence is an issue, but domestic violence also covers a very broad range of activities. There's a tendency, I think, in the legislature to think of the domestic violence violator leaving the factory job, going to the speakeasy, and then coming home and beating up his wife and kids. That sort of case does happen, but there's a whole range of things, and sometimes it is also where people have had the worst day of their life in their relationship. And so every case has to be evaluated on its own merits. Some cases need to be plea bargained and there needs to be treatment. In some cases, repeat offenders and other serious violations such as stalking need much stiffer intervention from the judicial system. With regards to having two homicides that were domestic violence related, that's sort of an outlier. We don't have a whole lot of homicides in this particular jurisdiction very often. It is an unfortunate statistic of murder cases that usually the perpetrator and the victim know each other. And one thing about domestic violence is you can be on probation, you can have restraining orders, and if someone is going to commit a crime of violence like that, there may be no way to stop it.
And I would like to say that there is a domestic violence coalition, a task force, and that my office hosts those meetings every month.
Thank you. We'd like to open up to audience questions. Is there anybody here in the studio audience that would like to ask a question? If not, then I'll take it to a question that I have, which is, you know, this is going to your philosophies on prosecution, and we were just talking about domestic violence. In what instance would you take a sexual assault case to trial? They're hard to prove. Often the victim is scared and they are put under scrutiny. So Jeff, I'll start with you very quickly. Can you respond to when you would take a sex assault case to trial?
Well, of course, you take anything to trial depending upon the evidence and the strength of the evidence. But you also consult with the victim in a sexual assault case. I have tried a number of sexual assault cases before juries. And part of that equation, part of that analysis, is where the victim is. I think it's the district attorney's job to empower victims, to allow them to have a voice because they haven't had one, because they've been victimized. And I don't diminish their voice by saying, well, the only evidence we have is that which is derived from your voice, your word. I work with law enforcement and prepare repeatedly that particular victim and ensure that victim is ready, willing, and able to go to trial. And I've found that going to trial empowers victims. It also acts as a deterrent for those who would commit these heinous crimes in our society.
Sherry? When would you take a sex assault trial or case to trial?
Sex assault victims are very traumatized, and they're often very scared of going to trial. And so I do listen very closely to the victim, what she wants. I also counsel her very hard and very heavily on what's going to happen if she goes to trial and the fact that we may not win. The evidence is often one person's word against the other. Sometimes we have DNA, sometimes we don't. Sometimes it's a consent defense, and it makes it difficult for the jury. And so I work very closely with the victim as to what she or he wants to see happen and whether she or he is able to handle all of the stuff that's going to happen if we do actually go to trial.
Chip?
Well, the short answer is when I have to. Sexual assault can be very difficult cases. My legal career goes back before DNA was used in the criminal courts. I did sexual assault trials back then where we did not have that kind of evidence. It has gotten much easier in some respects if you have scientific or biological evidence. But that doesn't happen in every case. But every case has to be treated as an individual disparate case. You can have a classification of sexual assault, but the question is what is the strength of that evidence? Is there physical evidence? Is there biological evidence? How is the victim? What does the victim want out of the case? And then, of course, there's the other side. You have to sit down and talk with defense. You may find out things about that case from the defense that you did not know about, and that may affect how you prosecute the case as well. So you cannot pigeonhole just a classification. You have to look at the entire set of facts in any individual case.
Thank you. We're getting close to the end, so I want to do a quick lightning round and ask you all the same question, which is, have you ever been fired, and why? Sherry, I'll start with you, and we'll go down the line.
I can't think of an instance where I was ever fired. I have had quite a few jobs and changed partners and done some various things, but fired, no.
I have been fired, and it was because I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I needed more training, and the justification was enough for me to make sure that I'd never put myself in that position again. I sought training and didn't take a job I wasn't ready for.
Can you elaborate? Was it an attorney or?
It wasn't as an attorney when I first started. I also was a let go from a hardware store because I had a college degree and I thought I was too good to stock shelves, even though I grew up on a farm. So I had an attitude, but I don't have that anymore.
Thank you. Chip, have you ever been fired?
Nope.
Okay. At the end, I want to ask you a question, which is kind of your closing statement. You know, there's been extensive media coverage in recent days of your race, and you participated in a debate last week and then tonight. What do you feel has been missed that you want voters to know about you and why you're the best pick for DA? I'll start with Sherry, since she's right here to my left.
I've been the DA for the last 4 years, and I think I've done a good job. It has been an office that is relatively free of controversy and has operated well. We've had good successes at trial. We've had good people. We've had good interactions with law enforcement. Why do we need to change at this point? Things are going well. My diversion program is there. The SART program is working. We've given out more than twice the amount in victims comp. I can tell you I've done a good job. Being DA, you don't often make a lot of friends. Somebody's going to be unhappy at the end of the day, and sometimes they're going to talk about it. You can't make everyone happy. That has happened in my time. It's going to happen in times to come. But look at my overall record over the last 4 years. Look at what I've done with Krablunik and all of the other cases. I think I've done a good job.
Thank you. Jeff?
I'm hearing different. From one end of this judicial district to the other, people think we need a change in leadership at our district attorney's office. People are insisting we need somebody who's a real prosecutor, who's prosecuted cases, has gotten their knuckles bloody in the courtroom, and actually handled cases. And when that person has an opinion about whether a case should be tried or not tried or charged or not charged, there's credibility behind that opinion. And the only way that you get this news is that you leave your remodeled office and you go out into the judicial district and you meet people where they are. You talk to the citizens. You talk to the law enforcement. There's broken relationships that should not be broken over petty things, over wars that are being waged in the newspaper. That's unacceptable. As a leader, your district attorney should put aside those petty personal conflicts and not have a war in public, but work with you, not against you. Not create an us versus them atmosphere, which is what I'm hearing people perceive our DA's office to be today.
Chip?
There's been various talk from the various candidates about their various positions. Jeff talks about his experience. I have more experience as a district attorney than Jeff does. Sherry talks about her experience in office. And while she has been the district attorney for the last 3.5 years, during that time, there have been endemic problems in that. The trial dockets are backed up and maxed out generally about 6 months to the speedy trial. Number of courts have double or triple set for trials. Last year in 2015, 130 criminal cases were set for jury trial. 7 finally went.
The question was how you would be a good DA.
I understand. And I was getting to my answer on that. And the short answer is to correct those things, it takes understanding how the system works. I understand how the system works both as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney. I know how the system gets into those fouled up situations, and I know how to get the district attorney's office out of those situations. Part of that is you have to change the philosophy with regards to how the deputy district attorneys approach cases. Part of that is you have to have open communication with the defense, because if they want to clog things up, they can, but they're as organized as a herd of cats, and so you do not have unified action from them. So you have to talk with all the sides, the police, the defense, your deputy district attorneys, the victims, the witnesses, and you can sort out the problems that exist.
Thank you. That's all the time we have, so just a reminder, this is an all mail-in ballot election. If you have not received your ballot by the end of the week, go to your respective elections department. Ballots must be returned to the county clerk by 7 p.m. on November 8th. This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. You've been listening to a live debate from the Dunaway Community Room in the Pickens County Library. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. If you've missed part of the debate among the candidates running for the DA's seat in the 9th Judicial District, which includes Sherry Coloya, the incumbent, and challengers Jeff Cheney and Chip McCrory, you can go to Aspen Public Radio later and hear a recording of it. And tune in all this week and next week for more debates and town halls. On tomorrow night, Tuesday, we have a debate with the Pickens County Commissioner candidates, and Wednesday is the Garfield County Commissioner candidates, along with the presidential debate following that. You can find a full schedule on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. We now join Fresh Air. Have a great night.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Tim Wu, thinks advertising has gone too far on the internet. Too invasive, too aggressive, too pervasive. His new book considers how we got to this point by examining the rise of the advertising industry. The book is called The Attention Merchants, The Epic Scramble to Get Inside Our Heads. Attention merchants are the people who harvest our attention, firms whose business model is the mass capture of attention for resale to advertisers. Wu is a professor at Columbia Law School. He's best known for having coined the expression net neutrality. Tim Wu, welcome back to Fresh Air. Did this book come out of personal frustration with internet ads?
You know, something like that. It came, frankly, from that experience, which I don't know if you've had, where you sit down at your computer.